feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Here on Searchlight, we are studying the book of 2 Samuel. It is the story of David's ascension to the throne as the first good king of Israel. David is a man after God's own heart and a good example for us in his passion for the Lord. But things are not always smooth in David's life. As we pick up the story in chapter 3, we see a bit of civil war going on in Israel. Let's now join Pastor John and see what the Lord will teach us in this story.
2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 6, "And it came to pass, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul." As you recall, Saul had died. There on Mount Gilboa, battling against the Philistines, he and three of his four sons went down. They're dead. But now, Saul's fourth son, Ish-bosheth, has been placed in a position to carry on in place of his slain father. And Abner, the general that was in charge of Saul's army, is behind this move to put Ish-bosheth in a place of power, you see. David has already been acknowledged as and anointed as the king by Samuel the prophet. But the people are waiting to see whether David can step up and take control. And there is a battle now going on in Israel to see who will ultimately gain control of the throne. So there's a civil war going on. Abner fighting on behalf of Saul's family, Ish-bosheth, who's on the throne, and David and his men. And the battle goes on for a number of years, for 7.5 years in totality. Well, during this time, Abner realizes that Ish-bosheth is a man who is not particularly gifted or strong or capable. In fact, his name means man of shame. How would you like that to be your name? Sorry, fellow. Man of shame. And Abner realizes that he is going to have to really grab the reins of power. That Ish-bosheth is not a can-do kind of guy. That if this dynasty of Saul is to continue on, it's going to be up to Abner, really, to make it happen. Because Ish-bosheth just doesn't have it. So he begins to consolidate, Abner does, even greater degree of power. He does this, verse 7 tells us, by taking Saul's concubine, a gal by the name of Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, and Ish-bosheth said to Abner, "Wherefore hast thou gone into my father's concubine? Why have you done this, Abner? Why have you taken my dad's concubine, Rizpah?" Now, this was a way for a person to say, "I'm in control. I'm in charge." When a person took another man's concubine, it was in essence saying, "I'm stepping in to where he's been. I'm now in control." That's why in a few chapters from now, we're going to read about another situation similar to this as it relates to David's son by the name of Absalom. David's son Absalom rebels against his dad, David, and drives David out of Jerusalem. And while David is on the run, Ahithophel, a very wise counselor, who used to be David's advisor but now is siding with Absalom in the rebellion, Ahithophel says, Absalom, here's what you need to do. Take your dad's concubines and go in unto them and let all of the nation know. That would be an indication, hey, I'm in control. I'm taking over. Absalom will be saying in a very real way, I'm in control, you see. So that's what's happening here. Same kind of deal. Now in this situation where Abner says, I'm grabbing Saul's concubine, Ritzbah, and I'm going in unto her to say, I am now the man in command, you see. So when he does this, though, this upsets Ishbosheth. What are you doing? Who do you think you are, he says, going into my father's concubine? Well, Abner, verse 8, was very wroth for the words of Ishbosheth. Am I a dog's head? Abner barks out. Pardon me. That was rough. But anyway, am I a dog's head? What are you challenging me about? What are you doing, man, Ishbosheth? Who are you to challenge me? If it wasn't for me, hey, you wouldn't have a chance at being in place regally. You wouldn't have a chance of retaining your power realistically. Do you think I'm a dog's head? So now Abner is ticked off at Ishbosheth because Ishbosheth is challenging Abner concerning what Abner did in taking this concubine in that way. Am I a dog's head, he says, which against Judah do show kindness this day to the house of Saul thy father, to his brethren, to his friends, and have not delivered thee into the hand of David, that thou charges me with a fault concerning this woman? Give me a break. Hey, I'm being nice to you. I'm standing up for your family, for your father. I'm the one that's keeping you in a place of authority, Ishbosheth. Don't be coming down on me. And he's very upset. And then he says this in verse 9. Abner goes on to say, so do God to Abner and more also, except as the Lord hath sworn to David, even so I do to him, to translate the kingdom from the house of Saul, to set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan in the north, even to Beersheba in the south. And Ishbosheth, verse 11, could not answer Abner a word because he feared him. Abner was so upset and so ticked off that Ishbosheth would challenge him about the concubine. After all that Abner felt he did for Ishbosheth, he said, I'll tell you what, I'm not a dog's head that you can treat me this way. And I'm going to do what the Lord has promised, what the Lord, verse 9, swore to David, that the Lord was going to give David the kingdom. I'm going to see to it that that's exactly what happens. Which is interesting, because it shows that Abner knew all along who ought to be king. Abner knew all the time. He knew deep within his soul, he knew very clearly that the promise to David from the Lord was that David ought to be the king, you see. So Abner here was actually, by his own word, fighting against the will of the Lord. Oh, he was showing loyalty to Saul. He was being a good soldier of Saul and showing loyalty to Saul's family. But in reality, he was going against what he knew to be God's will, and that is that David was supposed to be the next king. So now this comes out. He blurts this out. Hey, you can't treat me this way, he says to Ishbosheth. And I'm going to see to it that God's promise to David comes to pass. I'm going to make sure it happens. So now Abner is changing sides. Abner is walking away from Ishbosheth, and now he's going to be siding with David. And Ishbosheth couldn't say a word because he was afraid. So Abner then, verse 12, sent messengers to David on his behalf saying, "Whose is the land?" Which is a phrase that means, let's negotiate. "I'm here to negotiate with you, David. You know who I am. I'm the man that really controls the power in Israel. And I want to negotiate with you. Make thy league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee to bring all of Israel unto you. I'll turn over the whole nation to you, David, if we can negotiate this." And David, verse 13, said, "Okay, I will make a league with you, but one thing I require from you. That is, you're not going to see my face, Abner. No negotiation. There'll be no peace talks. There'll be no peace treaty. Unless you bring Michal, my first wife, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. I want my first wife back." Remember how Saul gave Michal, his daughter, to David because David went out and killed a bunch of Philistines? And he brought the foreskins of those Philistines to Saul. And Saul said, "Okay, you did this act of bravery, so you win my daughter's hand." And then Saul took Michal back, took Michal away from David when David was then on the run from Saul, and gave her to another man. Now David says, "Here's the deal. I'll negotiate with you, but I want you to bring my wife back." Problem is, she was married to somebody else at this point. What's David doing? David doesn't need another wife. He has already been adding wives, as we talked about in our study last week. He already has six wives. He's going to get some more as the story continues on. What's the thing here? Well, it's personal. That is, it's an ego thing. He wants his woman, you see. And he doesn't want one to get away, so to speak. So there's an ego. There's a macho ego thing, no doubt. But it's also political. If I can get Michal, Saul's daughter, back with me, it will make the consolidation of my base of power easier. It'll bring Israel in easier. Judah, the tribe of Judah, was already with David. They recognized his authority. They anointed him as king, you see. But he, David, knows he needs to consolidate his base for the whole nation. And he thinks, this is the way I can do that. Get Saul's daughter back with me. So it was an ego thing, but it was also a political maneuver, no doubt. I want my wife back. So David sent messengers, verse 14, to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, "Deliver me my wife Michal, which I espoused to me for 100 foreskins of the Philistines. I killed 100 Philistines for her." And Ishbosheth sent, as part of this peace negotiation process, and took her from her new husband, Phaltiel, the son of Laish. And her husband, Phaltiel, verse 16, went with her as she now is being brought back to David, and he follows her, Michal, his wife, and weeps behind her. Abner said to him, "Go return, beat it, get out of here." And so he returned. This guy is basically a wuss. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, but you know, here's what's happening here. I mean, you know, he's his wife, Michal, you know, somebody says, "Hey, David wants her." "Oh, no, oh, no." He cries and weeps and snivels and snorts and all the rest. But he doesn't fight for her. He doesn't stand up and try to protect her from this kind of thing. He just kind of weeps and whines a bit. I'm not sure he deserved Michal. Well, on the other hand, maybe he deserved Michal. Michal wasn't the best wife in the world, as we have seen and shall see further. But it's a pathetic picture here. So this guy is weeping and, "Oh no, my wife, they're taking her away from me." He weeps and whines and all that stuff. Kind of wimpy. Well, Abner, then verse 17, had communication with the elders of Israel saying, Now, you sought for David in times past to be king over you. You recognized David. you realized he would be a grand king for the nation, you see. So now do it, verse 18. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel out of the hand of the Philistines and out of the hand of all their enemies. Abner also spoke in the ears of Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin. And Abner went also to speak in the ears of David, who was in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel and that seemed good to the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner, verse 20, came to David, where David was at Hebron with 20 men. And David made Abner and the men that were with him a feast. So now Abner comes to deliver Israel into David's hand, if you would, to say, hey, war's over. No longer is there going to be a civil war in the land. I'm giving you right now the hand of Israel, David. Let's negotiate. Let's turn it over to you, you see. And so they're there at this feast. And Abner, verse 21, said to David, I will arise and go and will gather all of Israel unto my lord the king, that they may make a league or a peace treaty with thee, that thou mayest reign over all that thine heart desireth. David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Great. Okay. I've got Michael here. You want to switch sides? You want to join with me? Terrific. Great. Let's do it. Abner says, okay, I'm going to go gather the people and we'll come and anoint you as our king. You'll be king of the whole country, the whole nation, you see. Just then, verse 22, the plot thickens. The servants of David and Joab, the men of David who were with and being led by Joab, came from pursuing a troop. They were involved in a skirmish, a battle, and they brought a spoil with them from the battle. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for David had sent Abner away, and he was gone out in peace. Well, when Joab, verse 23, and all the host that was with him were come, they told Joab, saying, Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and the king David hath sent him away. He's gone in peace. Joab came to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came unto you. Why is it that thou hast sent him away and he is now gone? What are you doing? He's the enemy. He was here with you and you sent him away? You made a treaty with him? You trust him? David, what are you thinking? Don't you know you're asking for trouble if you let him go? What are you thinking? What are you doing? See, Joab had no use for Abner. Because if you recall from last week's study, Abner killed Joab's brother, Asahel. Remember when the skirmish was going on between Joab's men and Abner's men? And Joab was running up, and Abner was running, and they were all chasing each other, and here's Abner running, and he looks behind him, and there's Asahel, Joab's brother, chasing him. Hey, go find some young guy to fight, Abner said. I don't want to kill you. But Asahel wouldn't stop. Joab then took his spear and poked him with the blunt end, not the sharp end, not the pointed end, but with the other end. And it went through his ribs, Asahel's ribs, and he falls dead. You see, remember that story? Well, that's Joab's brother. And Joab has a blood feud going now because Abner killed his brother. Even though Abner said, don't chase me anymore. I don't want to hurt you, son. But Asahel wouldn't stop. And now Joab hears, you mean Abner was right here, David, and you're negotiating with him? And you let him go in peace? Oh, boy. When Joab heard this, he was upset. Thou knowest, Abner, verse 25, that he came to deceive you. He's going to trick you. And to know you're going out and you're coming in, to know all that you do, he's just scoping out the situation so he can ultimately get to you. When Joab was come out from David, verse 26, he sent messengers after Abner, which brought him again from the well of Sirah. So now Joab sends messengers, go get Abner, tell him to get back here. David didn't know about this. When Abner, verse 27, was returned to Hebron, Joab, this is key, Joab now takes him aside from the gate. It says in the gate, literally from the gate, to speak with him privately, quietly. So here's Joab now. Hey, Abner, can I talk with you? Abner thinks, cool, we're on the same side, we're on the same team. Well, let's step outside the gate of Hebron here, shall we? Let's talk quietly, privately. Okay, Abner says. And they step outside of the gate, right outside of the city of Hebron, where Abner was. And when they get outside of the gate, Joab smote him under the fifth rib, and there he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Joab says, this is for my brother. Boom. And under the fifth rib, Joab smites Abner. Just like Abner smote Asahel, so now Joab smites Abner, and Abner dies in the same way that he killed Joab's brother. Afterward, when David heard it, verse 28, he said, oh, I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner. This isn't my fault that Abner was killed. I didn't order this. I didn't desire that. I wouldn't do this. So verse 29, let it rest upon the head of Joab, this guilt, and on all his father's house, let there not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue. That means a running sore, or is a leper, or who is crippled and leans on a staff, or falls on the sword, or lacks bread and starves to death. David's not real happy. He says, may Joab's family, Joab, and all that descend from him be cursed perpetually. Lepers and cripples and starving to death and dying by the sword in battle. May what Joab has done come crashing down on his head and his family too. David curses him. David's not really happy with Joab. He's upset, he's ticked off, he's very mad at Joab. How could you do this? You murdered Abner. Abner switched sides and joined me. We negotiated in good faith, and then you tricked him to step outside of the gate, and you killed him. And because of this, may your family, Joab, be cursed perpetually. Wow. I point this out because we'll see in the next chapter that Joab becomes David's general, David's chief of staff, David's main man, because Joab does something that we talked about two Sundays ago. David said, whoever can find a way into Jerusalem is going to be my general. And Joab found a way going up through the water shaft and into the city.
You may be wondering, what's the deal with this guy Joab? He doesn't seem to be real spiritual, but David will soon make him his general. To find out what is going on, please join us for our next program as Pastor John continues this story. We'll see you then. This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
We all go through challenging times in our lives, but we are not alone in these times. We have a faithful and loving God who walks with us day by day. To help us explore the faithfulness of God in these difficult times, Pastor John has made a book available called A Future and a Hope. In this book, John shares some of his personal experiences in dealing with tragedies, including the death of his young wife and later the death of his 16-year-old daughter. As John relates his own stories, we see a God who is faithful and compassionate at all times. A Future and a Hope is especially comforting for those who are currently experiencing tragedy or loss in their life. If you would like this book for yourself or someone you know, you can order it from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.